Very good. So
that's the model we tried to investigate, and we are attempted to calculate the annihilation rate of dark matter, thinking first about the case when the coupling constant is sizable and there is complete thermalization of the scalars. And so based on that idea, we try to calculate the annihilation rate. At home, I checked that first we did like a factor of two error in the case when the scalar was very heavy. And it was basically annihilating into pairs of scalars. So Higgs doublet can be thought of as for individual scalars at high energy. And we have calculated the annihilation rate into those. And everything was fine, except we missed a factor of 1/2. And that factor of 1/2 comes from the identical nature of particles in the final state, because you cannot tell apart theta and pi minus theta directions. So that basically limits our integration not from theta from 0 to pi, but to 0 to pi over 2, which translates into an additional factor of 1/2. And so this is the answer, okay? So we almost got it right. So the qualitative, of course, conclusions about where the particles go where this model goes into strong regime, strong interaction regime, as we push the mass of dark matter to be higher and higher, that conclusion doesn't change as well. Now it will be changed by root 2 for the coupling. Okay? So that's a nice thing to have notes in electronic form. Another thing that we have started, almost finished the calculation of, by the way, my notes were expanding, right? So from this size going, it's like a teacher gives the student an example, 1 + x² expand, right? And the student writes it bigger and bigger. So anyways, there were a couple of mistakes when we were rewriting things. So there is an overall factor of 4 that was here, and I somehow missed it when I was writing m squared. And also, if you look at that expression and substitute this one, in the end, it will be minus 2 here. Okay, so this is correcting for the errors. And also the phase space, if we account properly for the velocity of the final particle has this 1 minus square root of minus mb squared over ms squared. So if overall cross section in that case looks very simple and nice indeed, and here's the answer, and that's mb. Okay. So that was here. My luck with OneNote ran out because it turned out that I have opened the mobile version. That is very difficult to save this file. So I'm still thinking how to save it or to print it. When I try to print it, it cuts it to the to that length, right? And all the rest is basically it comes out pretty bad, so I have to figure out what to do. But I would now like to maybe switch to another version of it, which is less mobile, apparently. And So continue now with the, with this example. What we are going to do is I still need that. So we are going to continue and derive consequences from this example that we consider. So in particular, we would like to consider the case of MS smaller than MH over 2, and by normalizing cross section sigma v of SS annihilation to BB bar to a desirable value of 1 picoburn. It should be 1 picoburn or larger in that model, right? If it's larger, it would be a subdominant component of dark matter, but then it would be okay model, right? If I repeat, if it's smaller, then you get too many of these particles because they have not have time to annihilate away, okay? So from here, we should be able to derive lambda squared, and from there we should be able to understand the value of Higgs to decay rate to scalars, and try to understand the consequences of that for the observations at the LHC. Right. So now we have to be a little bit more careful with numbers, right? So I'm just going to rewrite the annihilation rate that we had over here. So sigma v was 1 over pi lambda squared MB squared, and 4 MS squared minus MH squared squared, and square root of, sorry, no, not the square root, a third power, 3/2 power of 1 minus MB squared over MS squared to the power 3/2. Okay, this power 3/2 can be explained. Okay, it comes from charge and parity conjugation properties of this psi bar psi operator or BB bar operator that we create a pair of big quarks from. Okay, if it were B bar gamma 5B, then it would, the power would be 1/2, not 3/2. So this power of 3/2 is a reflection on the fact that the BB bar pair appears in the P wave out of this operator. Okay, so for those of you who love particle physics, I leave it to your exercise to understand how the parity and charge conjugation comes together to that, right? But this power can be explained. Looks correct, okay? All right, so now let me also write this very, very similar calculation, a very similar number, but let me just quote Higgs to BB bar cross section, and that is 1 over 8 pi MB over V squared, and then 1 minus 4 MB squared over MS, sorry, over now M Higgs, over M Higgs squared, also to the power 3/2. 3/2, and the dimension of it is given by MH. Okay, so this is In reality, this is nothing but the Yukawa coupling of the big work. That's the mass of the Higgs, 1 over 8 pi. We usually say that the Higgs resonance is very narrow. Why? Because the Yukawa coupling of the big work is very small. Okay? So now so in principle, we're now ready to address the issue of what would be the additional rate of dark matter, of a Higgs to a pair of dark matter particles if we fix that annihilation rate to the required rate of 1 picobarn or larger. Okay? Before we do that, I'd like to point out a slight subtlety with this. I was using the mass of the big work and the Yukawa coupling. The mass of the big work is okay. It's physical observable. The Yukawa coupling, I have to be really careful what I use for Yukawa coupling, right? Because there is a QCD running effect that changes the quark masses at depending on the Q squared, right? So if you remember yesterday we were saying that big quark mass is about 4 to 5 GeV. It's known, of course, much more precisely. But the point is that the Higgs mass, the actual value of the Yukawa coupling for the big quarks that we're gonna use is actually smaller, because if you dress the Yukawa coupling of the big quark by radiative corrections, you will see that it actually runs to a smaller value. So if effectively it's at high energy, it's more like 2 GeV rather than 4 or 5. Okay, so this in reality is an important effect. So if you, for example, take the Higgs decay to tau or the charm, there's very similar masses if you look into particle data group table, and you'd think, oh, Higgs should decay to charm more frequently because there are 3 charm quarks because of the color. Okay. But in fact, it decays to the tau pairs more than to the charm pairs because of that effect that the Yukawa coupling of the charm quark due to the QCD effects runs a factor of 2 smaller. So it's even factor of 3 of color does not help it. Okay, so it's a subtlety, we have to have that in mind. But in fact, the normalization of that big quark mass over here would have to be taken at the scale of 2 ms, because that's the important energy or momentum transfer scale that's used for annihilation. And here it's at the scale of mh. Okay. Questions? Anyways, so let's evaluate what the implication for the Higgs decay for at least one sort of tentative value for ms, right? Let's take MS, for example, 20 GeV. It's an example. And evaluate sigma V. It's 1 over pi. And I won't require that much of an accuracy. And so here, 4 ms squared relative to mh squared can be dropped, really, because this is a small correction, right? Mh is 125, and 2 ms squared is much smaller, right? So I would write approximately, and then here I would have mh to the 4, and then the square root or the power 3/2 is also very close to 2-1. So that's my estimate for annihilation cross section, and then we'll equate this to 1 picoburn, and which is 10 to the minus 36 centimeters squared, and we'll try to derive lambda now, which is which comes out to be lambda squared is basically pi m h to the 4 over mb squared times 10 to the minus 36 centimeters squared. And let's try to evaluate that. Okay, so let's ignore the subtleties with the renormalization of the big quark mass. Let me use 4GeV here. Okay, so I would put pi 125 to the power 4. 5, well, let's say 4 squared GeV squared times 10 to the minus 36 centimeters squared. And remember the conversion units for H bar and C that we used the last time, it's 0.2 GeV times 10 to the minus 13 centimeters, everything squared here, so for the right dimension. Okay, so what do we get? GVs of course cancel out, so I have pi times 125 to the power 4 times 10 to the 4 over 16. Then I have basically 10 to the minus 10 to the minus power. I'm sorry. you should follow, okay? So it's 125 over 16, and then it's 125, so it's if I factor it that way, it's 10 to the 8, okay? So that's significant stuff. Now from that denominator we get from that big ratio we have all units cancel out, right, as it should be. Then we get 10 to the minus 10, right, times all right, 10 to minus 10 times 0.inverse of 0.2, so it's and it's squared, so it's 0.25. Okay, that's what I have. So let's pull these things together, right? So what do we have? So it's the power is 10 to minus 2 times 0.25, so it's 1/4. So we have pi 125 to the 4 over 16, and a factor of 4 that I got from this 25 and 10 to the minus 2, right? So okay, so I get 125 to the power 4. How much is that? Well, approximately.
Eight file.
No, it's not 8. I don't. Is it 8? No.
Eight.
What?
I think it's got to be less than 8, right?
Yeah. Well, what is it? Well, 1, 2. What?
2. Roughly.
2.4, it's more than 2.4 would be squared, right? So we need to square that, right? So maybe indeed it's on the order of 8, right? Because it's
1.9.
Well, does anyone have a phone to calculate that?
It's 2.4.
But it's still power 4, right?
It's to the power 4.
1.2 squared would be 1.44, right? And then the square again, right? Yes, so it's a 4, right? Or 2.5, there you go. Right? Okay, all right, good. So now the last effort, so what do we get? 3 times, so let me say that this is on the order of 4.1, right? No?
It is, yes.
Maybe a little less or more. You type it in.
It's 0.12.
Okay, good enough. Now we got that thing out. Now this is it small number? Yeah, as a couple of courses, it's okay number, right? It's fine, right? Now what does it imply for the the Higgs width? So we got to calculate now gamma. I carry that lambda squared of 0.1, right? And I calculate gamma of the Higgs to BB bar. And I'll just give you here on the side the value of gamma to in the Stern model. And this gamma in the Stern model is 4.2 MeV. That's a prediction. It's not a direct measurement at the colliders, right? It's extremely difficult to do. But this prediction is, of course, consistent because the whole model is consistent very, very well with the Stern model. Okay. What we observe. All right, so we just carry on with this. Again, we can neglect that part over there, and we just calculate this roughly. So I'm gonna change that. So 1/8 pi. Remember, last time we were talking about what the value is of the vacuum expectation value. It's 246. So if I use 4 GV again, that's a bit of an overestimate, right? I can't use 4 GeV at 100 GeV for the B quark mass, so I'll put 2. That's an effect of QCD renormalization in my head, okay? So 2 GeV. So here is the 2 GeV to over 246 GeV. Why don't I use 2.4, right? And my life is easier squared. This is all not going to matter, as you'd see in a second. So 2.4 GeV squared times 1 to 5 GeV times lambda squared that we calculated as 0.1. So what do we get? All right, so we get... basically 10 to the minus 4 from that bracket times 1/8 pi is another factor of 4 or so, right? 4 times 10 to the minus 2, right? Because 1/8 pi is like inverse 25, right? So we get 0.04 times 0.1 times 1/25 GeV, okay? So we get 2. Notice that the exponent I get is 10 to the minus 6.
Plus 4, because we had 1 over 2.4 times 10 to the minus 2.
2.4 over 246, so it's squared, so it's 10 to the minus 4, right?
It was 1 over 10 to the minus 2.
What's that?
It was 1 over 10 to the minus 2. Right, so we have 2.4 over 2.4 times 10 to the minus 2.
Yeah,
it's
10
to the minus
4.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's okay, no?
Yeah, no, it's fine.
2.4 over 2, that part is fine. So I multiply this, get 10 to the minus 6 times 4. Is that correct?
I mean, it's not done. So.
What's that?
It's not.
It's not complete. 5.
It
ten
should
to
be,
the minus 5.
Yeah, it should be
yeah,
5 times 10 to the minus 5.
Pi is 25.
Yeah.
Yes.
So 125 by 8 pi is 5.
Yeah.
And then you get 10 to the minus 5.
Yeah. It's 5.
Here. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's what you're talking about. Yeah, it's 5. What's that?
Yeah, then there needs to be 100.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, sure.
And my punchline is somehow lost. And this is something that it's GV, I understand. No, this is not a Higgs to BB bar. Why did you say that? So this is a because I mixed up various things, right? I mean this this is Higgs to BB bar, but I'm supposed to this is the stair model calculation that we are doing, right? So this is what comes out for Higgs to BB bar. And I messed up different things, so never mind that. We have to correct all this. Sorry. Apologize for this. So this is the stair model width, but I have to compare it with the decay of the Higgs to two scalars, right? Which I mean, what am I doing here, right? I mean, this is, I already gave you the answer for the BB bar, and it's 4.2 MeV, right? I mean. For the total width. So now we need to calculate. So we need to calculate that, right? That's what we need to calculate. So we do it very quickly. So d gamma is 1 over 32 pi squared times the momentum of the S particle over the mass of the Higgs squared times the matrix element squared. Okay, so the matrix element squared we have calculated last time, and it's going to be 2 lambda v. And there is d omega, the phase space. This is 2 lambda v squared. That's the matrix element. The integration over over the angles should give me 2 pi because of the identical particles. The momentum of the scalar particle is mass of the Higgs over 2, okay? And that's mass of the Higgs squared in the denominator. Now it's correct. That's the width of the Higgs to a pair of scalars, okay? So the lambda squared enters here. Why I was inserting lambda squared to the BV bar width, I have no idea. Sorry. all right. So let's pull these numbers together. So what do we have? I have 8 in the numerator and 64 in the denominator, and therefore I have to have 1/16 pi lambda squared v squared over the mass of the Higgs in the denominator, and that seems to be the answer. Okay.
Yep.
Right. Now we can substitute the numbers, right? So now we calculate Higgs decay width of 2 SS, SS, and we get...
Eight.
Yes, coming from M8 to world 2.
64. Yes, there is 8. Yes, I agree with that. I agree with that. There's 8. So that's we already worked hard to calculate 1/8 pi. So it's over 4 times the lambda is 0.1, and then now we have 246 over that, and that is squared over 125, and that's in GV. Okay.
Yeah, it should be 0.1 squared, right? Because it's lambda squared.
No, lambda squared was 0.1.
Oh, okay.
Lambda squared was 0.1. Okay, so what do we get now? With some mistakes on the way, we're still getting close. So I get 100 out of this ratio, so I should write as 4 times 0.1 times 246 squared over 125, and that's all in GVs.
2 GVs, I think.
Yeah, 2. It's around.
Yeah, 2 GVs.
Okay. That's what we got. So if that's the case, what would be observational consequences for the Higgs resonance? Yeah. Let's think about that. I even had the slide, which I was supposed to say. All right, so gamma of the Stern model width is 4 MeV. Now we have gamma of the Higgs to a pair of dark matter. We got 2 GeV, right? This is incredible, large, right? So what if that would be the model? What would happen to the observations at the LHC? What would be the consequence? You don't see them, right? They don't interact with the detector. If you don't see them, can we like completely forget them?
Missing energy.
Just right, it's missing energy. You have to work hard to see the missing energy signal.
Would it make the Higgs peak wider?
Yes. Yes, it would actually make it wider. But the main important thing is that would be how much of the observable channels are we going to get, right? So what is the observable channels? How does the signal scales as the production cross section for the Higgs, and that's okay. That's normal, right? I mean, it's not modified in that model. Times, didn't ask for that. Times the branching ratio of the Higgs to a given channel. For example, you know, signal in gamma-gamma would be branching of the Higgs to gamma-gamma, right? So we would write a sigma of production cross-section Higgs times gamma of the Higgs to gamma-gamma divided by gamma total, right? And the gamma total now, right, it would write normally gamma of the Higgs inside the standard model. But now we have an additional piece there, right, plus gamma of a Higgs to a pair of dark matter particles. Now, in the example that we just did, the width into this two states, right, was that width was completely was much much larger than the standard model width, right? So that would be I would claim very inconsistent with observations. Why? Because the this would be this term dominates, right? And if I can approximate it as sigma of production of H, then I would write branching of Higgs to gamma gamma inside the Stern model, and then it would be the width inside the Stern model over this gamma of Stern model plus gamma of the Higgs to two dark matter particles, right? And that is much, much less than one. That's what we derived, right? So it would mean the huge dilution of the observable width of all observable channels in the Higgs boson, right? So this model for the mass of dark matter the mass of the dark matter much smaller than let's say of the Higgs over 2, there is a missing width, and typically it is large, okay? So the very observation of the Higgs therefore disfavors the part of the parameter space with I'd say MS smaller than 50 GeV is all disfavored, or is you can say excluded. All right. Any questions here?
This argument still hold if you go to like very light masses? Like what happens?
Yeah, it works even better and better. We think this model, this argument works. We can modify the model, then it would not apply necessarily verbatim, right? But in this model, the lighter the Higgs mass is, the dark matter mass is, the more and more Higgs tends to decay to that, because the annihilation rate would be set by lighter particles, and there you covers are smaller, and that would require lambda to be even larger and a larger width. Okay, so this it's been nice to check on that, but the qualitative conclusion a little bit surprising. We got a factor of 1,000 larger than the standard model width, but that's the qualitative aspect of that is definitely okay. All right. Very well, so this is an important conclusion, but what if the mass of the dark matter particle is larger than the twice the Higgs mass, okay? So that if that's the case, then the collider signature would go through the an off-shell Higgs to the pair of dark matter. That is a difficult proposition, okay? So this is very, very, very tiny rates, okay? So this is not going to be all that great. So therefore, we have to also use other available tools to, for example, explore that model, right? So what are the tools that we have? And I noticed a poster by one of you who works on direct dark matter detection. And there you go. So what should we do? Tell us. No, seriously, right? I mean, we should consider the predictions of this model for the scattering of dark matter on nuclei, because you know, people worked very hard, including your colleague, for many years, so we better use the data, right? So the next order of business, therefore, is to evaluate the scattering of dark matter on nuclei. It's a vast literature on that, right? But we are going to stick to that model we have. And basically, the idea now is that we have S as dark matter. So lambda squared would have to be right, right? So lambda squared would have to be given by sigma v of 1 picoburn. Okay. So that what is really unknown, the coupling to dark matter in that model, is we have a very strong prior on that from the annihilation cross section as a function of the mass. Okay? And we just disfavored very light dark matter in that scenario, very light meaning like a few tens of GeV and lighter. But what if it's 100 GeV, right? So in your experiment, what is the typical sensitivity for 100 GeV WIMPs?
10
to minus
14.
10 to minus 14
or so.
In for the cross section, what I mean. We have this plot. We'll see. So the cross sections at the weak scale are in terms of the individual, say, dark matter on nucleon cross sections are probed at a level of 10 minus 46 centimeters squared, and give or take. Okay. All right. So we'd would like to calculate now the, or at least to consider the following process. So there is an S particle coming in. There is a virtual Higgs boson, which I could draw as a point, because this is now in the T channel of very heavy resonance. It's not unlike all the diagrams that you were evaluating with Kai with weak interaction. So it's very heavy particle exchange, right? And there is a nucleus here, that's the basis for the direct detection. The velocity of S particles is on the order of 10 to minus 200 kilometers per second, which is on the order of 10 to minus 3 time, or from the speed of light time. So this is a little less, but that characterizes how much kinetic energy this particle can carry, right? So if we just take the mass of the particle at around 100 GeV, then the kinetic energy would be on the scale of 10 to the minus 6 times 50 GeV, right? Because it's mv squared over 2. So this is, it comes to a 50 kV. And 100 GeV is very commensurate in size with the mass of the nucleus itself. So it's clear then that in the collision there can be a very efficient transfer of that energy into how efficient depends on the coupling constant, but there is no kinematic limitation here. You can transfer as much as that amount of energy to, typically maybe less, a half, into the nucleus. What is the typical sensitivity of this direct detection experiments to the energy deposition? You know.
Like 10 kV.
10 kV. So this is right in a nice spot that if we transfer more, okay, we'll put the cuts and we'd look only at the rate. At a certain window. But in any case, this is we can't help noticing that this is a very right scale. Okay. For direct detection, shall I say. Very well. So what do we do next? We have to evaluate that diagram. And of course, the experiments chose to report everything in terms of the cross-section of scattering. Of dark matter on individual nucleons. And Higgs is roughly, isospin blind particles, so the coupling to proton and the neutron would be roughly the same. Okay? So let's try to attempt that calculation. Okay, so we're in this vertex. We have already discovered that we should be writing 2 lambda in times the electroweak wave, okay? Not the velocity, electroweak wave. I have an unfortunate V notation for both the velocity and the wave. Okay, so there is a T-channel Higgs propagator that will give us 1. Over a mass of the Higgs squared here, and there is a nucleon, right? And now we have a complete non-relativistic scattering. So we have to just do this calculation again. And there is of course a question mark. What do we know about the coupling of the Higgs to a nucleon, right? So there's a coupling here. That coupling is not measured directly. Nobody has seen any forces, even though I was advertising the Higgs as a new source of new force, but at the level of electrons and nucleons, nobody have seen the interactions of the Higgs boson. So one would have to employ some theoretical arguments to infer the size of that cross of that coupling. Okay. Any questions? It's a bit of a calculation again, I'm afraid. Yeah. But we have to work on that because guess what? Somewhere down the road here, right? Here's the data that we need to use, right? So this WIMP mass, we chose 100 GV, right? And there is a sensitivity, like I said, at 10 to minus 46. If we predict anything above that, then this model is in trouble, at least for that mass range. Okay, so therefore we need to work out that cross section to be able to use the data. All right, and maybe I could just for now use some shortcuts indeed, because otherwise we won't fit in time. All right, Maybe we can try to calculate it after all. All right. So, what do we have again? We use the formula we have already used. This sigma is m squared over 164 pi. And then the S parameter here is given by the sum of the MS plus M nucleon squared, okay? So because it's non-relativistic scattering, all the velocity contributions I can put to zero, right? So that's the total mass in that channel. Then I would furthermore write it as 1 over momentum scale p1 squared, and then there is the matrix element that is completely t independent. So in fact, I can right away take the integral over the t parameter, and it will give me 4 p1 p3. These are scales of 3 momenta, and since it's and that's already the absolute values, and since this is elastic scattering, I actually can cancel that against that. Okay, so. All right, so this is a little fast, but that's what we have. So we have 1 over 16 pi ms plus mn squared times the matrix element squared. Okay. That matrix element squared, let's quickly calculate that. That includes 2 lambda v in the vertex squared, mass of the Higgs squared, that was a propagator, and it enters squared again. And then I have 1/2 for the average of the initial spin of the nucleon times trace of plus mn, and then p3 plus mn. Okay, I'm doing the calculation of that, and there is a factor that I advertise that we don't yet know, and that is coupling of the Higgs to NN and that enters squared. All right. So let's press on with that. The square of let's evaluate this trace now. That gives us two P1 P3 plus MN squared. But guess what? P1 and P3, these are non-relativistic momenta, and the scalar product of the two four vectors is given by the product of their energies, which are indeed equal to the mass of the nucleon as well. So therefore, we get 4 MN squared out of this calculation. Okay, so continuing with the cross section, I get sigma equals to MN squared over 4 pi MS plus MN everything squared. I have still 4 lambda squared v squared, so 4 cancels out. What do we have left here is this coupling that enters there is still a coupling that enters, and that's the coupling between the Higgs and the nucleon squared. And that's our prediction for the cross section. We check the dimensionality of that expression. We see that it's wrong because I have forgotten MH to the 4. It's good check, right? Now we see that that everything is fine in terms of the dimension, and all the factors that we care about is there. Moreover, for the heavy compared to the S compared to the GV, which is the scale of the nucleon mass, this bracket is dominated by MS, so it's 1/MS² behavior. All right, so we were pushing away from dealing with what is the coupling of the Higgs to the nucleon issue, right? And then we have people who were working out, where John was one of the people who have worked out the couplings of the Higgs, was involved. And I think if you read his book, you will find it there, I'm sure. Anyways, is it large or small? So that now we have to address a real hard particle physics question. So coupling of the Higgs, or it's virtual Higgs, okay, to a nucleon, large or small? Our first thing, right? I mean, like the Z coupling to the nucleus to a nucleon. Well, for a neutron, it's like 1/2 in units of the weak charge, okay? But what is the Higgs coupling, okay, to a nucleon? Higgs couples to heavy particles. What's that?
It should be light because the ion has volume and...
You up and down it has inside, but it also has a lot of glue, okay, on the inside. So there is it's not an easy question, but the first idea we have to have is that it's likely that this coupling is small. Okay, on the normal scale of couplings has to be small. Why? Because it's not the top quark mostly that's inside the nucleon, right? I mean, if it were a top quark containing hadron, if a top quark would be for some reason stable, right? Then it would be order one, okay? But it has to be small, okay? We say it has to be small.
Oh.
because the nucleon contains contains light particles, and these particles are so these are light quarks. And gluons. Okay. All right. So it's likely that we are going to have a small answer because of that. However, this experimental sensitivity is so strong that we actually might have a chance. But we have to first figure out that coupling. All right. So I'm just going to quote you at this point an answer, and I would try to motivate it. Okay, so in the limit, of in the limit of mass of up and down and strange quark going to zero, that would be a chiral limit. The mass of the nucleon is given just by the glue. Okay? And in that limit, the coupling of the Higgs to a nucleon is proportional to the number of heavy quarks, and that for this approximation you can take charm bottom and top if we're talking about the standard model. And should there be other contributions from other quarks, would have to be taken into account as well. If there were other heavy quarks over the V. Times 2/3 mn, and then there's a coefficient b, and that coefficient b is a somewhat famous coefficient. It's 11 minus 2/3 times the number of light quarks, and that's that comes from the running of SU3 coupling of gluons with light quarks, and let me just roughly estimate it here that it would be number of 3, which is the number of heavy quarks times roughly, as far as I recall, 70 MeV in that limit, 70 MeV, and that's what this whole factor amounts to. That's 70 MeV, and it's divided by the vacuum expectation value of electroweak wave. So with this input that I will going to motivate you in a second, we get the value for the GHNN coupling at the level of 10 to the minus 3, and I don't think we would probably know it with order 1 uncertainty. So our predictions for the scattering cross sections are not going to be that precise, okay? So because we're dealing already with non-perturbative QCD, so this input comes from the low energy theorems and the connection between the mass of the nucleon and the which is n bar n operator, and with the trace of the stress energy, a trace of the stress energy tensor over the nucleon state, and that trace has indeed this contribution from the basically B alpha s over 8 pi g mu squared. So let me spend one more second. So what in fact we're calculating is that the T channel alpha Higgs coming in, there is a loop of either charm or bottom or top quark. There are two gluons whose sort of non-perturbative contribution to the nucleon mass is given by the that matrix element, and this low energy theorem relates to the mass of the nucleon. Okay, that's as good I can. So this gives us this coupling G. Higgs and N. And what I'd like to point to is that for any elementary fermion, okay, for elementary fermion, the Higgs coupling is given by basically the product of the mass of that fermion and one of the vacuum expectation value for the Higgs. So the Higgs is always added inside the standard model in that basic combination, 1 plus H over V, right? So for a nucleon, we know that the mass is close to 1 GeV. For nucleon, we get something on the order of 200 MeV over V, because this was 700 MeV times 3, okay, the number of heavy quarks. And that is less than the mass of the nucleon over V. Okay, so that's so there, in natural units, there is a bit of a reduction. But initially, people even thought that, oh, maybe the coupling is close to zero because there is no the contribution of light quarks is very small, but it's not. Okay. All right. With that, we can basically go back to our calculation that we worked hard to get, and we can substitute this. We still need to figure out what to lambda to use for. Well, let's do it for 20. Well, let's at least do it for to a 20 GeV mass, because we knew then we know what lambda to use. Okay, so we derived that lambda, right? So let's just do this calculation for lambda. For the cross section, so that after all the hard work, we get sigma for this nucleon scalar scattering cross section. We go back here, so we go. That's at the top of the page is our answer. So we'll approximate that as mass of the nucleon squared over the mass of the scalar squared, V squared over MH squared. I would probably have 1 over pi, yes. So I have lambda squared over pi, and then I also have this tricky factor g h n n squared. So now let's substitute the numbers and see what we get. Let's again, okay, let's use it for 20 GeV, and the curve that we saw covers a lot of ground, right? Including 20 GeV, which is here, right? So we have already killed that data that point from the Higgs decay arguments, but we already know what lambda we should use, so that's good. So let's carry on this calculation or estimate, I should say rather. So we'll substitute MS to 20 GeV. So we get 1 over 20 squared. And notice that I have made a mistake here that you should check. Then there is a factor of fourth power, right? Because otherwise even dimensions are not right. So 1 over 20, 246 squared over 125 to the 4 GeV to the power minus 2 times lambda squared over pi times 10 to the minus 6 roughly, and that's what we have 10 to the minus 3, so 3 heavy quarks times 70 MeV over V electroweak, where this very relatively uncertain estimate that we have maybe 50% accurate or something like that, because the limit that I have taken of completely massless quarks, light quarks, is not perfect. So that's what we have for the cross section. And moreover, we should substitute lambda to be 0.1, since we have already worked out that, right? So now we have to work again to get to the actual number. Okay, so let me deal with 1 over GeV squared first, right? So I have to write 0.2 GeV times 10 to the minus 13 centimeter everything squared divided by GeV squared. That gives me right away the correct dimension for the cross section, and that's good. Now I have 1 over 20, I leave it like that for now. 1 over 20 squared. Now, from this ratio, I have 2.46 squared over 125. We've seen these powers already, right? times 10 to the minus... So 8 in the denominator and 4 in the numerator, so it's 10 to the minus 4, okay? And then finally, we have to substitute our lambda squared, which is 0.1, divided by pi, which is 3, times that factor is 10 to the minus 6, okay? Correct or not? The factor to keep track of is this one, because that gives us a lot of suppression here. I think it's correct. All right. So apart from multiplication, we have a prediction for the size of the cross section. So we should get it right before the class expires. So what we get 10 to the minus 26 centimeters squared, and that's 10 millibar when you square 10 to minus 13. Then GEVs, of course, cancel. We get 0.2 squared divided by 20 squared. We have 10 to the minus 4, we have 10 to the minus 7, and we have 246 squared over pi and 125 to the 4. Okay. These are tiny numbers, right? Let's at least get the exponents right. Okay, so what are we at? 10 to the minus 26 centimeters squared. This ratio is 10 to the minus 4. 10 to the minus 4. This product is 10 to the minus 11. And this ratio is what? Order one? It's one. Order one. Okay. Order one. So that's the size that we get for the cross section. We get a little on the high side, I should say. I mean, it's a tiny number, but I was expecting it to be even smaller, but. We get 10 to the minus 41 centimeters squared. Yeah. That's we might have made mistakes, but we can go back to these notes and check. So now here is the plot from paper we've written with our chair who disappeared with Cliff long time ago, and I was in. Year 2000, and this is how our prediction. This was the limits, and at 20 GeV, you see we are off by an order of magnitude from the correct calculation somehow. I predicted we get somehow too large a lambda. So somewhere there we should go back and check. It's probably not 0.1, but there is I suspect that there is something that we messed up with the numbers. Anyways, that's the predictions we made. This is a function of the S mass for a choice of the Higgs mass, which was not known at that time. Okay. Goes down here because the annihilation is dominated by a resonance here, so you don't have to have large lambdas. So you therefore you have a very small cross section. That was the bounds back then. At that level, right? So now we predicted something that is somewhere on top of that plot. So our prediction came out to be basically plugged in here, right? And it's that's the point that's already completely ruled out by the existing data. I think we made somewhat an overestimate in the size of the lambda, but that is not a terrible overestimate. But that's the range of the scattering cross sections we were looking at. Okay, so this exercise gives us also an impression how strong the constraints are from direct detection and how powerful they can be in discriminating different models of dark matter. Notice that this scattering was highly disadvantageous for us because we have taken the price of this GHNN coupling that came out to be 10 to the minus 3. Even with that suppression, we still get the cross section that is significantly above the experimental limits. Okay, so that if it were an exchange by a Z boson, for example, the predictions would be even higher because the Z boson couples to the nucleon with the strength much stronger than the Higgs. Okay. All right, so maybe I'll just show some update from this paper. So over here, and this is a paper also already outdated because it's from 2013. So what you see here is the space on this lambda. So this is the abundance curve. So we were calculating it somewhere here for 20 GeV. So the Higgs decay rules out almost completely everything except for a small vicinity very close to the Higgs mass over 2, where there is a strong resonance for annihilation, right? So this part survived, and there is a small part of the parameter space that survives at that high energy and survives from the high dark matter mass, and it survives because of that dependence on the scattering cross section that drops with the heavy mass of the scalar. Okay, any questions here? So we can now formulate our conclusions for the minimal Higgs model of a minimal Higgs portal model of dark matter in the WIMP case. So we took sizable lambda, and then the abundance of dark matter gave us a prediction for lambda as the function of MS. Right? We have calculated in two regimes, but in principle, one can, of course, carry out these calculations in general. That also gives us a prediction for gamma of the Higgs to a pair of scalar particles. And it also gives us a prediction for scattering of scalar particles or scalar dark matter on nucleons. And then confronting this data gave us confidence that the model is highly constrained. So in fact, you can say that only narrow vicinity of a mass near MH over 2 survives, and multi TV range for MS survives, and that's it. Okay. That's a drastic thing that happened on my professional lifetime, because back in 2000 we thought there's no way there would be a speedy resolution for this, and it turns out that a Higgs was discovered with no evidence for any missing width, so that kills the light dark matter the Higgs mediated dark matter, and then also marching on of the xenon program has, or in general of direct detection has put a strong dent on all models. Now it used to be only the Z exchange models that were constrained directly by experiment. Now all models with the Higgs mediation are also significantly constrained. Questions? All right. In remaining 1 minute, I'd like to mention what we can do next. Right. So this was an example of a large lambda thermalized cross dark matter annihilating into the standard model via virtual Higgs or to a pairs or if it's heavy to pairs of Higgs's, W's, and Z's. Okay. Go into a completely different regime that we discussed yesterday, that the coupling constant is small. The particle is not present initially, but then the freezing processes create a certain abundance of these particles. We can also estimate what the size of the lambdas we would need, and of course they would come out to be a tiny coupling. So this would be also a viable model based on this, but it would be much harder to probe directly. Okay, but we'll discuss that after the break. Okay.